If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Alonement. I'm Francesca Spector, a journalist, author, and host of this podcast. Each week, I interview people that I'm interested in, all about their time alone and what it means to them.
It isn't enough to say that you can know yourself by being alone, because there are ways of being alone that below the surface are actually ways of not being with yourself.
You can feel lonely in a room full of people, and you can feel so content completely on your own.
Whatever your age, life stage, or relationship status, we can all enjoy a bit of time by ourselves. And on this show, we discover wisdom and personal stories about how to do that. Because when alone time isn't lonely, it's alonement.
People who are able to feel seen and understood, feel enough within themselves when they're alone, are so capable of giving that to others.
A lot of the cultural discussion that we have tends to be about the adjustments that introverts need to make in order to thrive in our extroverted world. But I think it really goes both ways. I think that all of us need to learn to make adjustments, you know, to find a greater sense of balance.
My guest this week is Anita Bhagwandas, an award-winning beauty director and more recently the author of Ugly, Giving Us Back Our Beauty Standards. It's a book that examines the damaging impact of narrow beauty ideals, and it serves as a brilliant manifesto towards a more inclusive, compassionate attitude. The book explores the importance of practicing self-care on your own terms, not what the beauty industry tells you you should practice. That's something that Anita knows a lot about after 15 years in the industry. Anita also lives alone in London, like me, and we discuss the creative joys of cooking for one, getting to plan a week that perfectly balances quiet nights doing laundry with going out to gigs with friends, something she personally really loves. Plus, we have an honest discussion of why getting flaked on can just affect you much harder when you're single or live alone. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Happy listening. Before we get to the episode, I want to thank our season sponsor, Sensate. Have you always loved the idea of meditation but never quite got on with the practice? Sensate, a palm-sized infrasonic stress and anti-anxiety device, is the friend that you need. I've been practicing things like breathwork and meditation for 2 years, but integrating this little device into my daily sessions, which syncs up your choice of relaxing soundscapes from the Companion app, has helped me discover a new kind of deep relaxation. There are lots of tracks to choose from, including nature sounds for stress relief and soothing sleep rhythms. Visit getsensate.com/alonement for 10% off your first device. I'll also pop that link in the show notes. Anita, thanks so much for coming on. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we've had the pleasure of speaking twice in 1 week because we were accidentally at the same speed friending event last weekend, which was hosted by a former sponsor of this podcast, Flashback, which was really, really funny to see you and know that we were going to have this recording this Wednesday.
I know, it was funny, especially as we were probably meant to be mingling and making new friends, and then we just sat and talked to each other all night.
Yeah. If anyone from Flashpack is listening to this, sorry about that. I mean, I think we sort of, you know, reinforced our friendship. So that counts, right? Maybe speed friending, but quality over quantity?
Yeah, I think, yeah, anything you come away with is a win, I think.
Yeah, sure. I'm gonna go with that and just apologize to Flashpack that we didn't really work the room that night. And we were also, I was thinking back, we were also joking about whose book title was worse to say on a first date, because I was complaining about the fact I have to go in saying, oh, I wrote a book called Alonement about being alone. And you were saying, yeah, well, I wrote a book called Ugly. So we were just basically sharing how awful that is as a first sell.
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about. Any would-be writers, definitely think about your book title, because people will Google your name and that, the title of the book. So yeah, it's definitely something to think about.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but my next book is going to be called like Sexy, Fabulous and Very Open to Hot Men.
I might steal that before you.
We'll have to fight over that one. So as aforementioned, so my book, this podcast, is all about time alone and when time alone is good and positive and, you know, for any prospective dates out there, not exclusive to hanging out and going on dates. But I wanted to ask to begin with, are you any good at time alone at this moment in your life?
Yeah, I am good at time alone. I think part of that is because I'm an only child. So I think I've always had a sense of being able to occupy myself. I'm never bored. I don't think I've ever been bored in my life. I don't think it's something I possess. There's always something I want to do or should be doing more often. So yeah, I'm okay with being alone. I think there are probably, I have a sort of quota of aloneness. That's not a word, but we'll go with it. I have a sort of quota. I have a bit of a quota. I think for me, it's like 2 days of being alone and then I need to sort of have some human interaction and see people and do something. But yeah, I'm generally speaking pretty good at being alone.
I should really start asking that question actually on this show. What's your quota of aloneness? Because sometimes people tell me, oh, you know, I spent a week alone on holiday. I didn't speak to anyone. And I find that fascinating because that's way too much, right? But I don't know. I think I'm maybe a little bit less than you. I think I'm maybe a day, maybe like one overnight stay in like hotel alonement, and then I need interaction. But do you think that that's the only child thing? Do you think this has sort of prepared you for your personal quota?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, there's just lots of things I like doing. I think I don't necessarily need to be entertained constantly from the outside. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's an introvert thing. You know, people do say that, don't they? Like, if you're more sort of on the introvert side, you sort of recharge by being alone. Whereas if you're more extrovert, you recharge by being around people. So I don't know, maybe it's that. But yeah, I don't have a problem with it until it gets past like 2 days. And then I start to not feel quite right.
It's funny because they say that the introvert extrovert thing is genetic. But I also wonder, do you think that when you meet other only children, they also tend to be introverts? I mean, I haven't even asked, but I think that means you're an introvert. But are you gauging there is that connection?
I don't think so. No. I think you're just okay. You don't panic with being alone in the way that I have actually seen friends of mine panic, particularly during the pandemic. I definitely have friends who are out all the time and they get all of their, I guess, their energy and their sort of, you know, their lives are so, so busy that actually when it came to sort of like being alone and being inside, and I think they really struggled with being left alone with their thoughts almost, or, you know, and quite often people got pets because of that, or, you know, roommates. And yeah, I thought it was quite interesting because actually, although it was hard and not enjoyable in any way, I was okay during the pandemic because I can always occupy myself. Whereas I do have friends who struggled.
Sure. I mean, to be honest, thinking about this, I don't think a hardcore introvert would even turn up to the speed friending event that we went to. I mean, I know we were going because we've worked with the company before, but I was telling an introvert that I was with earlier that day that I was going, and he just said, that sounds like my absolute idea of hell. So yeah, I suppose that introverted extrovert, you have to have that a bit of nuance there just to even turn up to those situations.
Yeah, definitely. Although I have to say, I think sometimes when I struggle with those situations, I do sort of like switch on this like journalist mode where I'm like, oh, this could be a feature. Or, you know, this weird situation could be, I don't know, inspiration for something. So I try and like see it from that perspective, and it almost like depersonalizes it and makes it a bit less awkward and weird.
Have you seen the bit in Peep Show where he's like, I'm Louis Theroux. I'm Louis Theroux.
I haven't, but that's exactly it. Yeah.
Any situation. And it's funny because he's not a journalist, Mark Corrigan, the guy in Peep Show, but he does switch that on. And I wonder how much it is a journalist thing, because I'll do the same thing. I'll sort of go into question mode and sort of, or, you know, investigation mode. Just one type of journalist. So I guess you sort of pick one and then sort of turn those events on their head. But yeah, maybe that's just a special skill we can switch on.
Yeah, I think we're quite good at also, I do this on dates as well, but if it's, you know, if the conversation is a bit lacking or they're a bit shy, I do switch into that journalist mode and I essentially interview them for like an hour, which is not great for me because it feels like work. But I think we could be quite good at like filling a silence, or quite good at sort of, I guess, trying to get something out of those situations maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And do you then come out of that situation enjoying the date as much, or do you think that perhaps they do as well? Like, are you surprised by the feedback?
I think everyone wants to, you know, be asked about themselves and have someone be interested in them. But yeah, I think I definitely have had dates where it's felt one-sided. Yeah, I guess for whatever reason they haven't asked me that much. That I know that's definitely happened to myself and lots of friends of mine, where you do come away and you're like, I know loads about them, but they probably don't know that much about me.
Yeah, I relate to that. I don't know what the answer is, though. Like, do you consciously turn off that instinct? Or because I think it's very easy. I've definitely been on the other side of it too, where a friend is just lovely and asking loads and loads of questions. And I'm like, oh, this is so nice. This feels like therapy. And I'm like, wait. No, I'm being wrapped into their lovely interview technique or their lovely conversation style.
Yeah, I think it can definitely be a way of deflecting attention away from yourself, which I have to say I do employ that sometimes when I'm, you know, I don't want to talk about something. There was a point during my book where I was very, very anxious and didn't want to talk about it. And so every time anyone asked me about it, I would change the subject or like ask them about them. So, you know, you can definitely use that to your advantage, but it's not good, I don't think, because I think it is that thing where actually, if you do let the silence occur, then actually maybe someone else will pick up that slack. It doesn't always have to be you, like almost people pleasing, maybe even in a way.
No, that's true. I mean, it's very, I suppose if you're used to it being one way round, in terms of you're used to that interviewer dynamic and you've put yourself in that mode, it's very, I don't know, it's hard to let surprises happen in the pauses. Maybe I'm trying to make a more existential point than I think here, but
yeah, that does make sense. Yeah. And actually, yeah, you don't, maybe it's a control thing. I don't know, like trying to control the narrative. But actually, yeah, sometimes if there is a pause, what's the worst that can happen? Someone will speak at some point. It doesn't always have to be you, I think, is what I try and do now.
And coming back to, you said that when you're spending time alone, that you have lots of things that you can do in that time alone and you're good at filling it. Tell me about this, because we were having a bit of a chat about hobbies during our speed friending event where we only chatted to each other. But tell me more about that. What are your sort of solo hobbies?
It's so funny whenever people ask this, my mind goes completely blank. But I guess one of my hobbies is, I love sort of anything old. So I love antiques. So I spend quite a lot of time looking, you know, antique fairs or looking for things online. I also love vintage clothes and collect those. So I, you know, spend a lot of time going to sort of vintage clothing fairs. I love lots of different kinds of music, including sort of rockabilly, which is sort of 1950s-y music, and do some dancing and stuff around that. So there's quite a lot of events and stuff that come with being part of that scene. So that's really fun. And then I guess if it's just sort of, well, I also sort of play tennis and like do lots of other stuff and go to lots of gigs generally. But if it, you know, is a case of where if just being alone and at home. I spend quite a lot of time on YouTube, which might sound really random, but I just think there's loads of fascinating stuff on there. So I do watch lots of sort of historical things on YouTube. Like, I've got a real thing about watching old London, like, colorized, and there's loads of great footage. So I love doing that. Like, it feels really amazing to me. Or I do online lectures and online sort of walking tours of different historical things. So I'm a bit of a history geek. So I actually spent all of lockdown doing that. And I came out of lockdown, I was like, oh my God, I'm like essentially a historian now. I'm not at all in any way, by the way. But yeah, I just knew so much that it was like really random, an unexpected new skill.
This is amazing. I didn't know what a massive geek you were. I've known you as this glamorous beauty director for years, but it's all coming out. I'm so glad.
Yeah, I know. I'm such a geek. Deeply uncool.
The only example maybe I've seen is I think they did that colorized historical videos thing on, have you seen the series Ridley Rose about the sort of East End of London? I think it was during the Second World War. They sort of do colorized versions of maybe footage.
Oh no, that. I haven't seen that, but that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's just so interesting. And I guess because we can't really imagine it. And maybe is there something different, do you think, in watching colorized versions of black and white footage compared to sort of the glossy recreations we might see in those period series?
Yeah, I just think it's fascinating. I'm quite a watcher, so I'm quite often observing things, and I think it's just fascinating, like seeing how people move, how they interact, and certainly just looking at the way things were. I don't know what it is about it. I've always been obsessed with like the past and like history. I've like, even since I was a little kid, I was really, really obsessed with the Romans when I was little. So like, I've always been into that sort of thing. Yeah, I don't know. It's odd. Geeky.
I know I absolutely love that. I know I'm teasing you, but I love that you have that side of you. And I think it's one of my favorite things about doing this podcast, that I'll ask that question and I'll be so surprised with how original some of the answers are. And I think that alone time sometimes shines a bit of a light on, I don't want to say people's core, because we're made up of so many different things, but perhaps the parts that wouldn't normally get to, I don't know, be mentioned sort of top line at the party or whatever. So it's really nice to hear. It's really nice to have learned that. I guess I'm hearing a lot already about you as a kid, and that, I guess, string, that common thread running through your alone time as a child and how your alone time is now and how it's influenced that. But how would you say, do you think there's also been an extent to which your relationship with alone time has maybe changed over the years?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I'm much more aware of the effect on it, on my mental health, in terms of like having too much or not having enough. So I sort of schedule my week around it in some ways, in terms of I try not to go out in the nights on a Monday and a Tuesday, so that I have that time to sort of feel like I don't know, I can do some cooking or do some washing or like do whatever it is I need to do. And then the rest of the week, you know, I've got a bit more flexibility to do things. Yeah, I think that's probably been the biggest change. Whereas I think when I was probably even in my 20s up until like my early 30s, I would quite happily go out every night and go to lots of work events, which is a big part of being a beauty journalist. Not understand why I would feel frazzled and like anxious and overwhelmed. And yeah, I think I've definitely sort of settled into a bit more of a routine now. I guess some weeks I get it completely wrong and I do way too much and I feel awful by the time I get to the Sunday night. But then on the flip side of that is sometimes that I do too little and I feel like quite isolated as well, living on my own too. So it is getting the balance right.
Yeah, I think that there is, I think that balance is so important. And I'm really glad that people talk about it now, because I think even, you know, thinking back sort of 5 years ago before I'd started this show, but when I just got out of a breakup, I was going out all the time. I was already going out quite a lot because I'm an extrovert who likes being at parties, but I was going out especially a lot because I think it was Christmas time just before. There were so many more invites than there would be normally because there's a lot going on around that time of year. And the thing that really amazed me is no one actually told me, you should spend more time by yourself. I don't think at that time, definitely, there was a narrative around that's too much time to be spending out. People will tell you quite early on if they think, oh, you know, you should probably get out a bit more. That's a bit of a, like a normalized insult, right? But back then, it didn't really seem the case. Do you think we've shifted a bit? Do you think that that's something you had to give yourself permission to have those sacred Monday and Tuesday nights, for instance?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think both sides of form has been fetishized in a way. So I think, yeah, you're right. You know, people would almost think you're a bit of a loser if you spent too much time on your own. You didn't have any friends. And there was that sort of narrative. Whereas now I think it's gone the other way. And it's almost very cool to stay in, because from what I've seen on social media, the people sort of really, really, really glorifying the staying in thing are people who are maybe in couples or, you know, et cetera, which is great. And, you know, this is one of the things, like, as a side note, one of the things of the pandemic, you know, it was just so, so different to the experience of being alone in the pandemic. Living alone was so, so different to, you know, friends of mine who live with someone. It was a completely different experience. Yeah, I think there can be a glorification of staying in too. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a really tricky one. Again, I think probably somewhere in the middle is best, but getting that balance is hard.
Yeah. Thank you for going there and acknowledging that nuance, because I think sometimes guests on this show might be scared to say to me, or you know, anyone might be scared to say to me because of what I represent. Yeah, we're maybe encouraging spending time alone a bit too much. But the reality is I absolutely agree. And I think, okay, so firstly, I really want to reiterate your point. Staying in is different as a couple, or, you know, I suppose when you're a bit younger, maybe when you're in your 20s and you've got a really glorious sort of, like, I don't know, beginning of Dolly Alderton's book, Everything I Know About Love type housemate set up, and you've got that, and that's glorious. That's, you know, or beyond that, when you've got, you know, when you're younger and you've got a family, you've got that sort of scaffolding, I guess. Talking about staying in, it's often, we often sort of conflate experiences, and I think it's really important to acknowledge that it is really different. And even I remember during the pandemic, the conversations about, oh, you know, we get to have a cozy night in now, or, you know, oh, it's so nice, don't have to go out to parties. But it is really different. Even that, I don't know, 1 hour of interaction that you might get if you live with someone, you know, absolute minimum, even just, you know, having a night in, knowing someone's coming home, it is different. And I personally felt like a traitor to my cause for a little while, maybe when I started talking about this subject, even to acknowledge that. So thank you for going there.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a conversation I have a lot with a lot of friends, actually, with a lot of single friends who, so this is an interesting one as well. You know, I guess there is this sort of, I think, rhetoric around counselling as well, and people sort of counselling plans, you know, for whatever reason, for their mental health and, you know, being too stressed out or needing some alone time, etc. And I do totally get that. But I think the implication of being cancelled on a single person that lives alone is really different to being cancelled on if you're in a couple or you live with a family or, you know, whatever it is, you're surrounded by people or another person, etc. Because, you know, if I have like planned out my week in terms of, you know, maybe I'm going to see someone on Saturday and then on Sunday I'm going to work, or I'm going to, you know, do some housework or whatever. If that person cancels on me on the Saturday, that means I haven't seen a friend or had any interaction the whole weekend. And I do have to explain that to, you know, married friends, etc., to just say, just so you know, totally fine that you've cancelled. I mean, not fine, because I'm not a huge fan of flakiness. But I have to say, you know, that, just so you know, that does impact me slightly differently. And I'm just sort of letting you know how that does impact me, because I think sometimes people just don't think about people who are single in that way, or they don't consider them in that way. And sometimes it's just as much as saying, this is how I feel.
I think, and you know, I also want to expand that out to, you know, people who are not single, but in long distance relationships, people who live alone, you know, people who are expats and don't necessarily have as much of a scaffolding of people they could just see last minute in the country that they're in. I think that there's a more vulnerable position there, and it's difficult, isn't it? Because it's difficult to advocate for yourself. I think as a person who has any degree of aloneness in their life, because there's one of you and you almost feel like you're going against the popular, not the popular, but the sort of, yeah, you're going against the grain, you're causing friction from perhaps what can feel, you know, what can feel sometimes like a very empowered position, but can also feel like a marginalized position, I think. And it's difficult to advocate for yourself sometimes. So, you know, I agree with you as well. I think that it's difficult because everyone has to cancel at some point in their life, right? Everyone has to, for whatever reason, do that. And perhaps I think, you know, among, you know, I have friends who are parents, and especially new parents, and that being able to flake or cancel or reschedule at last minute, that's almost a love language, definitely among them and other parents, because, you know, things change. There's that, there needs to be that fluidity. But I think on the flip side, not cancelling, not being flaky is almost a love language to people who are single or live alone and need that scaffolding. Because I'll do exactly the same thing as you. I'll sort of create my week with a very delicate balance and, you know, and sort of looking, approaching the weekend, I'm probably just as, you know.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm excited about that sort of alone time, that self-care Sunday, not to make it too much of a hashtag, but yeah, as that time as seeing my friends. But it immediately almost takes away, I think, of the value of the self-care Sunday if that plan then gets flaked on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess another interesting thing is that, and I, you know, I am particularly bad for like not loving it when people cancel, but also maybe not canceling enough. So if I put a plan in the diary, I generally stick to it, even at the cost of my time and my mental health. So, you know, I probably should ease up, actually, to be honest. But I think for me, I get a sense of rejection when somebody cancels on me, because I think A, because it feels like they don't value my time, but B, it feels like, I guess, they just had something better to do. And I know that's not always the case, but I do get, my immediate reaction is rejection.
it's difficult because I think on the flip side, and this is why these conversations are so important, by the way, to talk about the reality of it. But I think on the flip side, sometimes people think, oh, you know, they have a great sort of single, untethered, fun existence going to all these glamorous, cool things. You know, this plan won't mean that much to them. So I think by opening up that conversation, even though there's vulnerability there, and I think we've both expressed it here, I hope that that can help.
Yeah, I have definitely tried to be honest with my friends about how that makes me feel when they cancel. So, like, generally speaking, people don't, I think, because they know that I don't love it and that it's the scheduling balance. And also, so I've got ADHD, and it is that sort of rejection. It's called rejection sensitive dysphoria, like a very, very acute sort of sensitivity to rejection. So I have explained how that impacts when people cancel on me. No, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean that it's their problem. We do all have to cancel sometimes, like you said. But I think, yeah, just being really honest with people about how that makes you feel, I think, is good.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that that was an ADHD thing as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's not in the official diagnostic criteria, but it is. I think they probably will add it in at some point because it is something that sort of cuts across everyone with ADHD. Like, we all have that very heightened rejection sort of reaction.
And probably something with the growing conversation around ADHD that now is probably being talked about a bit more because there's more of a community and that can be shared and you can spot those patterns.
Yeah, definitely. I think things are sort of seem to be heading in the right way, definitely.
I want to move on. That there's a topic that I really wanted to ask you about. In Ugly, you talk about self-care a lot, and you go into it in a sort of, you sort of go into its origins. You talk about Audre Lorde's brilliant writing on this as well. It's really great sort of nuanced discussion. But can you talk more about this sort of myths that you were trying to counteract around self-care?
Yeah, self-care, I mean, it's such a big topic. I think, you know, it didn't really even come into our vernacular, generally speaking, until, I don't know, what, even 10 years ago. It is, I think, the origins of self-care do come from, you know, oppression and trying to find that space to reclaim yourself in the midst of being oppressed. So, you know, if we sort of look at the term from that perspective, some people might need a bit more self-care than others, which I know is a really controversial thing to say. And I think a lot of people will be like, oh, if you are in the world and you are facing more oppression of different kinds, you know, racism or, you know, ableism or, you know, whatever it happens to be, you probably do need a bit more self-care and a bit more space and a bit more time to look after yourself because of all of that coming at you constantly, etc. I think what the interesting thing about self-care, and I write about this in Ugly, is that it has massively been commodified by the wellness industry and the beauty industry and probably tons of others to make money off people, when actually self-care in its very basic form is free. And the thing that is statistically shown to give us the most happiness is community. And that is free, but, you know, you obviously can't sell that. So, I do think there's so much within self-care that's fascinating. But, yeah, I do think it has sort of been not, I guess, co-opted in some ways and has become this huge marketing term, when actually there isn't necessarily, you don't need a special candle to have self-care. You don't need to have a bath. Do self-care. Self-care for a lot of people is actually just having 5 minutes alone or cooking or doing a food shop if you are depressed and the idea of going outside is really awful. Being able to take yourself to the shop is self-care, or like those very, very basic things are self-care. It's not stuff.
And you're coming in from the inside here. You're coming in as someone who has worked in beauty journalism for years and just all the lovely things that you can buy and the value of those, I'm sure, as well. But it's interesting, I think, particularly powerful to hear that from you. I think that a line that stood out for me in the book, you say buying these things isn't a problem, but the act of buying one isn't self-care. So is it about the action that happens afterwards, almost attached to it? Or
I guess it is. It's self-care, you know, it just looks so different for everyone. And I think we have been sold this idea that self-care is stuff, you know, that isn't the case. And it's the same with wellness. Wellness isn't 200 pound leggings. You know, it's a whole host of things that are generally speaking free, and all the scientific things that prove, you know, that to make us feel better and make us feel happier and, you know, feel like we're nourished, etc., are generally speaking free. And I think that has just gotten so lost along the way, in the way that, you know, so many different industries have a vested interest in wellness, from tech to beauty to, you know, fashion and food. We are just being sold more and more ways to be well, when actually being well and, you know, self-care is free. So I think that's a good starting point. And working out what self-care means to you as well, because, yeah, as I said, actually for me, self-care isn't having a bath with like really expensive bath oils or whatever. It is just making sure that I go and buy fresh ingredients to do some cooking instead of getting delivery every night, or not working until 9 o'clock, or, you know, it's stuff like that. So yeah, it's definitely nuanced.
And you have to almost advocate for yourself with those things, because I don't know, I go through this a lot. Deliveroo, it's funny, you know, you mentioned that. I find that if I'm having a night in by myself, I'm probably better off cooking. It's a bit like watching TV. I like watching TV, I like watching films, but I like doing that with other people, even though there's a nuance there, because I actually like going to the cinema alone, but I like being I like being surrounded by others. The thing is, I where my head goes, and I think this is capitalism, is like, oh, I'll have a night in tonight, I'll treat myself, I'll get some Deliveroo, and then I have to be like, no, my version of actual self-care is cooking. But it's really hard to sort of cut through the effects of capitalism, or what we've been told for so many years, you know, maybe as you said, that decade since we've started bringing self-care into popular parlance, where we go there because our brains have been programmed by advertising, or, you know, push notifications, or I don't know what, to think in that direction. How do you have any advice for getting around that, for getting around that sort of that sort of unnatural external reinforcement that's constantly coming to everyone? I imagine you get it quite a lot as well from the being an insider in the beauty industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, I just think, you know, obviously there are some great sort of accoutrements to, you know, relaxation and wellness and stuff like that. But there's probably, for me, you know, as somebody who tries like pretty much every new wellness gadget that comes onto the market or et cetera, there's probably only 10 things I think that have ever made a difference to my life, you know, probably. And some of them are quite basic. It's, you know, I did mention candles earlier, but sometimes it is really nice to have a good scented candle with essential oils in that helps you relax. Like, those things can help a little bit. But I think the key is to actually just sit down and think, like, what does top up my tank? What does make me feel better? What does make me feel calm and rested? And make that list and sort of really think about it. Because actually, you know, maybe you don't enjoy cooking, and that's totally fine. So maybe a Deliveroo when you're in is something nice, and it does make you feel, I don't know, comforted potentially, which is cool. I think for me personally, I really do like cooking, and actually I find it really creative. And once I start, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Why don't I do this more often? But I think the other thing that's interesting, just as a side note on the cooking thing, is that I know so many people who do live alone who really hate the idea of cooking for one person. And I just think that's something we need to get out of, because actually we're really worth cooking for if we enjoy it, because not everyone wants to cook, and that is also totally cool. But, you know, we are worth doing that for as a solo person.
Yeah, I call it, I've actually given it the term only me-ism in my book, because I think it is that refrain in our heads of like, oh, it's only me, so I'll just have toast for dinner because it's only me. I'm not going to cook a big meal only for me. And I think it's hard to get around, especially if it's reinforced. If you come from, I don't know, a background, you know, a community. I come from, you know, a Jewish upbringing where it is all about cooking these big feasts to feed. I would say feed the 500, but I think that's more Jesus. But it's the mentality is there, right? You know, cooking for everyone and feeding everyone. It's quite hard to wrench that cultural conditioning, I suppose, around food being for the masses.
Yeah, absolutely. I come from an Indian background as well. So that's, you know, that's very much in our culture. We're very, yeah, very particular about food, and there has to be loads of it. Otherwise, that's a real shame on your family if there's not enough food. So I do get that. But like, you can freeze it. You can eat it for a couple of days. I don't know. I just think, like, if we don't put ourselves first, then who else? Like, who else is going to? So I definitely think, you know, if you enjoy it. And I do want to caveat that, because loads of people don't enjoy cooking, and that's fine. Don't cook, I think. If you don't enjoy it, don't do it.
But it's about just going back and asking yourself, like, don't just get Deliveroo because Deliveroo tells you to get Deliveroo. Get Deliveroo because you've decided that that you hate cooking. I mean, I can sort of relate to that, because I hate baking, like, with a passion. And I definitely gaslit myself into thinking that I wanted to bake during lockdown, and made myself a very unhappy single person household.
Yeah, I think, yeah, same. I really hate baking as well. Anything that needs precision is not for me.
Yeah. Sounds like a writer thing. And yet, makeup, is that different? That needs precision.
Yeah, I guess it needs a certain amount of precision, but it's also really creative. I think that's been quite an interesting thing for me. I have been trying to discover different ways to be creative and get my sort of self-care kicks from that too. So yeah, cooking, like, I got like a real jolt of like, oh my God, this is so fun and creative when I was cooking the other day. I do get that sometimes from putting on makeup, as long as it's, and this is something I talk about in Ugly, but as long as that comes from a place of enjoyment and creativity. And I do think one of the things that's happened in beauty is that when, you know, the way that makeup and the application techniques and all of that has become so, so just like wild. And so, you know, we're so advanced. You can, you know, there are people who are basically self-taught makeup artists and stuff now. It does mean that we have ended up creating this sort of makeup culture where everything about makeup is to hide. So it's, you know, it's like, it's transforming your nose to make it slimmer. It's hiding your jawline. It's, you know, putting on like 12 layers of concealer to hide your under eye circles and that sort of thing. And I think there is a real danger with that way of applying makeup, that you lose the creativity and all you're trying to do is hide and hide yourself. When actually, for me, the whole point of makeup is that we express what's on the inside on the outside, and it is about being creative and being like, do you know what, I really love blue lipstick, I love this particular color blue, I'm gonna wear that and I love that. Or it might be that actually I love experimenting, so I'm gonna do this on my face, or I love glitter, or whatever it is. But it should be joyful. I think it can be really easy for us to sort of slip into that place of just trying to hide everything. The added sort of thing on top of that is that each time that we do hide things on our face, or, you know, we're trying to cover this up and slim this and do that, it's that we're telling ourselves those messages over and over again. So it's almost like the opposite of a pep talk every morning when we put our makeup on. So yeah, I think it is about sort of rediscovering the joy and the creativity of things, particularly with sort of beauty.
Wow. And that's quite a powerful solo process as well. I mean, you don't, unless you're getting ready for friends, with friends for a night out when you're sort of 16, sadly it doesn't really happen as much when you, you're past the age of sort of 25, but unless you're getting ready with friends for a night out, that makeup process is a solo one. And I've never really thought about that, but as you say, it's integrated into what you're internalizing, what you're telling yourself as you contour your face. I mean, look, contouring in and of itself, I don't think we can call that evil, but I guess the thing that you're telling yourself is sort of quite insidious. And I think, I mean, Ugly really highlights that as well.
I think that's why it's, you know, maybe it is just sort of making it more ritual-like when you do, you know, do put on your makeup, like have your cup of tea next to you, like make it enjoyable. And also on the flip side, if you don't enjoy putting on makeup, don't wear it. Like, don't wear it. There is no societal obligation to wear it. And it is just about picking and choosing those things in life that you enjoy and that you get creativity from, or, you know, that feel expressive in a good way.
Yeah, like a bit like cooking, you know, it's again not telling yourself I should or shouldn't do this in my alone time, just, you know, going with what works for you. I wanted to ask as well, just on the subject of creativity, what do you cook when you're cooking for yourself? And is it different to what you would cook for other people?
Yeah, it probably is. Just, it's probably like a bit less visually appealing when it's just me. But like, you know, like earlier today, I did cook some stuff, and I will have it for the week and freeze bits of it and stuff like that. So I tend to make up recipes. I'm not great at following instructions or recipes. So I sort of, even if I start with something as a basis, it will go somewhere else. I don't know. I think I'm actually quite good at putting, like, combining flavors and stuff. And I guess I grew up, you know, watching my mum cook, and like, it's a big part of Indian families, like watching what your mum's like, watching like the cooking. And so I'm just quite good at knowing what will work and what won't. Like, definitely sometimes there are some disasters. I just kind of just like experimenting and trying stuff.
Yeah. And that, I guess you can practically do that a bit more when you're by yourself, right? Because I have a horrible habit of trying a new recipe when guests are about to come over. But it's definitely something I need to not do. I need to prioritize that creativity for my solo cooking.
I think like guests will appreciate it anyway, I'm sure. Mm. But yeah, I do like my biggest hack. There's this M&S Perry mayonnaise, and you essentially could put that on anything and it would taste amazing. So if in doubt, get that mayonnaise and put it on everything and it will taste good.
Oh, I'm now really regretting doing this podcast before that. Sounds delicious. And so we're kind of coming towards the end, but I definitely wanted to get this question in, and tell me if you do think this is too much of like a smushing together of our two themes. But hear me out with this one. I wondered if there's a value in time alone, simply because it's an escape from the sort of beauty standards that we feel when we're around other people. And I'm thinking, it's not quite goblin mode, but I'm thinking of when I'm home by myself and like my hair is piled on top of my head in like a pineapple bun. And I'm like wearing some ridiculous non-matching tracksuit, and like my glasses are really dirty, and you know, everything. There's something kind of obviously very unglamorous, but also maybe relaxing about that. That definitely for me at this stage of my life, living alone, I just can't do around anyone else. What do you think about that as a sort of, you know, use of one's time alone, that escape from beauty standards?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a valid point. The thing is that we don't need to, I guess it's almost not about the beauty standards. It's, you know, if you enjoy not wearing makeup, don't wear it, whether you're inside or outside. I think that's, you know, and it goes the same. If you hate colouring your hair, don't colour it. There is no rule out there saying that you have to do that. And that's, I think, what we all need to get to grips with, that we've been fed these sort of sets of rules around what we need to look like and what we need to do. And it's all of this sort of beauty work, which is what Naomi Wolf, who wrote The Beauty Myth, she called it sort of beauty work. And it is this hidden job that we all do. And actually, you know, maybe part of the reason that you like not doing that is because it's not, you don't have to do that job. Actually, you can just sort of chill. So I think it is about picking and choosing which of those jobs you enjoy. And actually, if I had to wear makeup every day, if for some reason I was forced to wear makeup every day, I probably wouldn't enjoy it as much. But actually, you know, I've turned up on camera now. I'm literally like, I've just been to the gym. I don't have any makeup on. And that is fine. Like, I can still show up as me. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't make me show up in a different way, because I am me with or without makeup. And yeah, I don't know. I think when it starts to feel like you need to escape from it in some way, then that is maybe the point at which to look at whether you really enjoy it, to sort of almost just decide. So for example, I actually find getting my nails done really, really tedious and boring. And obviously it's expensive too. So actually I sort of said to myself, I want to lighten this like beauty work load. So now I really don't, I actually do have them done at the moment, but I generally speaking don't, because I'm like, I don't really care. I don't get enough from it. I know it's expected, but I don't care. And I would rather be doing something else with that time. So I think it's about thinking about it like that, maybe, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think, you know, nails are a really interesting one. I quite often have my nails done, even though I also hate the process. And that's because when I'm stressed, I bite my nails like I'm sort of 10 years old, and I can't break that habit. So it's just a very, very expensive sticking plaster. But I do think there's something, I can imagine there would be something very liberating in letting go of that very expensive habit that I don't really even enjoy the process of. You know, the only way I've justified it to myself, I suppose, is that as a writer, or I suppose anyone in any office job, is that you see your nails quite a lot. But there's a lot of weighing up of different things, I guess, to work out what's right for you and what works for you. And I think that's been a bit of a thread in terms of what we've spoken about then bringing your actual self into it, not just the external standards.
Yeah, absolutely. It is about working out what you enjoy and what, you know, fills your cup and, yeah, what makes you feel creative and, you know, satisfied and what feels good. And if it doesn't, then I think that's probably a rule for life, isn't it? If it doesn't make you feel good.
Finally, I'd love to ask you what's your alone month? And that can be time alone that you've had recently that's been really joyful and fulfilling and restorative, or it might just be a memory of one time in your life where you had maybe something extended, like a solo holiday or something like that, where you really enjoyed that time to yourself.
So I think my alonement is probably staying in and sort of doing a bit of journaling. I know that sounds really yeah, I don't know what that sounds like, probably a bit boring, but actually, as someone who, as I said, I do have ADHD, I'm very in my own head, and it can take a lot for me to sort of be still and calm and work out how I feel. I sort of try to do 5 minutes of this actually every morning if I can, and just almost like check in with myself and sort of get back into my body a bit. And if I can do that in an extended period, sort of away at a spa or something like that, that's amazing. And probably my ideal alonement, I would say, just to sort of see where I'm at and away from all the distractions of life.
Yeah, I love that. And it's everything you said. It's cheap. It's free, you know, and I guess the cost of a notebook or however much your stationery habit is. You know, it's accessible. And I think that, you know, thank you for sharing that. Finally, actually, you know, my last question, what do you use to journal in? Do you have a specific favorite notebook or?
Yeah. So even when you were saying about the cost a minute ago, I'm really obsessed with stationery. It's another one of my geeky things. And I basically only write in Smyston, which, as you probably all know, it's very expensive. So I spend a fortune on fountain pens and Smyston. So yes, yeah, that's my go-to. It just feels more joyful when I write on Smyston paper. So I'm like, cool, I love that. That's fine.
So you have a proper fountain pen with the cartridges? Or
yeah, I love that too.
How
yeah.
They work? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I'd love to write in one of them. My handwriting's too messy and I sort of get it everywhere. It gives me a bad harking back to school. I'm glad that you've perfected it.
I mean, I say that like sometimes they leak in my bag. It's not foolproof, but it is really joyful. It feels really nice.
It's worth it.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, well, thank you. This has been such a great conversation.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been really fun.
So I was worried that Anita and I had exhausted all of our conversation at the party we both attended last week, but that conversation proved me wrong. It was so great to chat to her, and I know a lot of you will relate to what we discussed. If you'd like to follow Anita's work further, her brilliant book, Ugly, is out now. You can also sign up to her Substack newsletter, The Powder Room. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to my Substack newsletter, The Shoulds, as well, where I post weekly personal essays. This season of Alonement was edited by Pineapple Audio Production.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.